welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 categories smart. This is Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to The Life Note, The Language of Emotions, by Carla McLaren and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. In short, if you can empathetically communicate with your emotions as the specific and brilliant messengers they are, you'll have all the energy and information you need to create a meaningful and conscious life. End quote. In The Language of Emotions, author Carla McLaren shares how to find wisdom in your emotions rather than repressing or unconsciously expressing them. The author, who suffered from a childhood trauma, greatly developed her own empathy skills and leverages those skills to share her unique insights about emotions. In this powerful book, the reader has the opportunity to more deeply examine emotions, such as anger, apathy, shame, fear, depression, happiness, joy, and more. From this deeper look, we can then cultivate a more empowering relationship with our emotions. The first big thought: become an emotional genius. Each emotion has brilliance to share. Quote, emotions are messages from our instinctive selves. They can be important carriers of absolute and often unwanted truth. End quote. Imagine what your life would be like if you actually listened to what your emotions were trying to tell you rather than simply ignoring them. The author, Carla McLaren, suggests that each emotion offers not just information, but brilliance that you can tap into. By listening to this brilliance, you can become an emotional genius. Think about that concept for a moment. Becoming an emotional genius. Now that sounds like a challenge that Lifebook members will want to take on. Let's look at two examples, sadness and anger. Sadness is an emotion that is often repressed. We might think it's not socially acceptable to be sad, so we don't express it. The author says, quote, sadness in its mood state slows us down and makes us stop pretending that everything is all right. If we mistakenly fight the sadness, our lives will soon come to a complete stop anyway. End quote. In other words, if we listen to the wisdom that our sadness is telling us instead of trying to hide it, we can then start to heal. McLaren goes on to say, quote, sadness helps you let go of things that aren't working anyway. End quote. What about anger? What wisdom does anger have to share? Quote, anger in its mood state riles us up and makes us stop pretending that we weren't hurt or offended. If we fight our anger, we'll miss the boat completely and probably get hurt again because we didn't speak up. End quote. So anger isn't bad, as we're often taught to believe. It's simply sharing information with us that demands our attention. With these emotions, anger, sadness, and all of our other emotions, there's something that's trying to be communicated to us. When we actively and deliberately listen to that communication, we can then begin to take action rather than sweeping our feelings under the rug. The next big thought, avoidance and distractions, how not to deal with emotions. Quote, distraction and dissociation can give us a blessed vacation from suffering, but if they become habits, they will make us incapable of dealing masterfully with that suffering. End quote. We are reminded in the book how we tend to distract ourselves from our emotions and practice avoidance behaviors. On a more serious note, we even move into addictions. Rather than listening to our emotions, we're basically trying to find ways to cope. Our coping comes in the form of distracting ourselves, avoiding our feelings, or perhaps trying to drown our feelings in alcohol, drugs, or some other addiction. Let's consider distractions. They are literally everywhere, from the incessant beeping of text messages to the constant stream of emails to the screaming child, and don't forget that oh-so-very-important new cat video that just showed up on Facebook. It seems impossible to avoid distractions. One important strategy is to increase our awareness about what triggers the distraction. Quote, what happens right before we grind the coffee or plunk down in front of the tube or reach for the chocolate, the cigarettes, or the alcohol? End quote. If we can be more conscious about the feelings that send us toward distraction and avoidance behaviors, we can learn some new insights and then do something about what we learn. In addition to considering our triggers, we can also learn to examine what kind of relief we actually get from our distractions. For example, are we looking for a boost of energy from that video game? Are we seeking comfort and calm that we might get from chocolate? The more aware we become, the more proactive we can be about learning from our emotions and then creating the right strategies to address their needs. McLaren shares an insightful Buddhist saying, "Suffering is discomfort multiplied by resistance." This is quite a powerful concept when you think about it. We magnify our suffering through our own resistances to it, rather than just letting the emotion flow freely into and out of our minds and bodies. Instead of letting sadness flow through us, we resist feeling sad. Rather than listening to what our anger is trying to tell us, we bottle up our anger and resist dealing with the root cause. The author goes on to say, quote, "When I put my distractions aside, where am I? It's a few hours and a few hundred calories later, and I still haven't dealt with the original emotion." End quote. What emotions are you trying to resist? Do you really feel better when you're in complete couch potato mode, mindlessly watching another football game or the latest episode of reality TV? Or are you actually magnifying your discomfort from something that you aren't dealing with? It's a worthwhile question to consider. The next big thought, the internal questions, what to ask about challenging emotions. Quote, "Emotions don't cause trouble by themselves. They simply bring energy and information forward." End quote. In the language of emotions, there are individual chapters on each emotion, allowing you to dive deeper into each one, and particularly into areas where you might be struggling, perhaps with grief, with depression, or jealousy. In the spirit of learning from our emotions, McLaren shares questions that we can ask ourselves specific to that emotion in order to elicit wisdom. These insightful questions can be a great resource in guiding you to your own answers. Here are some of the internal questions that she asks us to consider. Anger's question. What must be protected? What must be restored? The author explains that anger emerges when your boundaries are broken in some way, and anger helps you to regain your sense of strength. When a car cuts you off in the road, it's natural to get angry because your physical boundaries have been violated. When a person makes you angry, consider what emotional boundaries have been violated, and as a result, what now needs to be protected and restored. Apathy and boredom's questions. What is being avoided? What must be made conscious? McLaren suggests that apathy is not an emotion, but it can actually be masking anger or depression as you repress those emotions. Are you practicing shopping therapy, where you think that the next pair of shoes is going to cheer you up from depression? Do you feel like a victim of your circumstances, but you're avoiding doing anything about it? This is where apathy might be kicking in, and it's time to look head on at what you're avoiding. The questions of guilt and shame. Who has been hurt? What must be made right? Guilt and shame are two emotions that are often repressed in a big way. By repressing these emotions, we don't allow them to perform the useful functions they offer us. We learn that, quote, "guilt and shame are forms of anger that arise when your boundary has been broken from the inside by something you've done wrong or have been convinced is wrong," end quote. If you don't welcome guilt and shame and listen to them, you can't uncover their internal source and then develop a plan to make them right. Hatred asks, "Who has fallen into my shadow? What must be reintegrated?" Fear asks, "What action should be taken?" Jealousy and envy ask, "What has been betrayed? What must be healed and restored?" Sadness asks, "What must be released? What must be rejuvenated?" Please consider taking some time to pick one or several of these emotions that you're wrestling with right now. Are you feeling apathetic or bored lately and can't figure out why? Are you feeling jealous but haven't addressed it? Carve out some time in your calendar or when you work on your life book strategies to ask yourself the internal questions that the author has outlined here. Really be honest and dig deep. There is brilliance to be found here, and we think you'll find it extremely valuable to uncover it. It's not easy to become an emotional genius, but we know you're up for it. The next big thought, embracing happiness, giving yourself permission for happiness, contentment, and joy. Quote, "Celebrate your joyousness and let it flow naturally. Joy will seek you out if you let it move in its own time and in its own way, not in yours." End quote. It's not just the challenging emotions that should be considered, but also more positive ones such as happiness, joy, and contentment. Let's talk for just a minute about happiness, contentment, and joy. Here the author poses statements rather than questions, and she also shares what wisdom these happier emotions can provide for us. Happiness. Thank you for this lively celebration. As Lifebook members know, there is a recipe for creating different emotions, and happiness is one of those where it pays to think deeply about what creates happiness for you. Many people have no idea what really makes them happy. You might have heard about lottery winners who actually aren't that familiar with what makes them happy and aren't as happy as most would expect them to be. For more on this, the author references the book Happiness, The Science Behind Your Smile by Daniel Nettle. There can also be the feeling that we're not really allowed to be happy, that happiness is for kids, not for adults who need to be serious and work hard. By embracing happiness and being thankful for it, we can learn from this as well. The key is to increase your awareness of what makes you happy and then get busy creating more of it. Contentment. Thank you for renewing my faith in myself. McLaren explains that contentment is a little different from happiness, that it tends to arise after an inner achievement. When we take actions and overcome challenges, we can feel contented with what we've done. The challenges may have even been emotional in nature. So we can, for example, feel more contented when we've worked through anger or shame. What can you learn from your moments of contentment? Are there ways that you can garner this feeling more often? Joy. Thank you for this radiant moment. Joy, it seems, is even one more step up the emotional ladder than contentment. Quote, joy seems to come forth during moments of communion with love, nature, and beauty, when you feel as if you're one with everything, end quote. Interestingly, joy can frequently come in tandem with a struggle or difficult journey, where joy appears at the end. Think of taking a challenging hike through nature and the joy that one feels when reaching the beautiful vista at the top. For all emotions, we are advised to let them flow. Welcome happiness, contentment, joy, and then let them go. Learn from them, but don't grasp at them. And then make room for emotions to flow naturally in and out of you. The next big thought, stress and resistance, learning from stress. Quote, we all do it. We hide our real emotions and tell people we're stressed out, which means we don't have to explain these tense behaviors that cover up our angers, anxieties, or suppressed tears. End quote. When you feel stressed out, what does that really mean? Stress, argues the author, isn't even an emotion, but rather a catch-all for any number of things. Sad, frightened, exhausted, ashamed. We often just say that we're stressed. When we repress a gloss over our emotions, in this case by saying that we're stressed, it's harder to take actions that will be helpful. Quote, your task is not to create a stress-free and perfect existence. Perfectionism is absolute proof that you've lost your flow. But to learn to respond resourcefully when stressors appear, end quote. One of the main points in the book is to honor your emotions and listen to them. If you can become more aware of what you are feeling and why, then you can become more specific about how to respond. If your stress is coming from feeling exhausted or overwhelmed, you could then take action by asking for help. If your stress is coming from anger, perhaps from the actions of another, this is a sign that your boundaries are being crossed and you should consider ways to address that. Are you angry that you're the one who always seems to be cleaning up after everyone in your household? Set a boundary. It's someone else's turn to load the dishwasher after dinner. McLaren also has an interesting perspective on resistance to stress. If we can notice what we're resisting and why, we can get to deeper insights and healing. Quote, suffering is relieved only by staying with the suffering until insight is achieved. End quote. This idea of suffering as a path to insight is a great way to turn the idea of suffering on its head and to recognize the value in it instead. The final big thought, your native language, emotions, and the power of nonverbal skills. Quote, you have endless amounts of information at your disposal. End quote. If we return back to this idea of listening to your emotions for knowledge and insights, you could view your emotions really as a language and actually consider that it is your native language. McLaren points out that many years before humans used verbal language, we were relying on our nonverbal skills to navigate our world. Quote, "Emotions are your first language, they're your native language, and they carry with them as much brilliance and power, perhaps more, than the human languages that sprang from them." End quote. Continue to let your emotions flow and allow them to come forward as needed. Rather than repress your sadness, your depression, your shame, or fear, let them emerge and listen to what they have to share with you. In turn, you can also begin to honor the emotions in others as well as within yourself. Quote, "If you can shift your perspective and honor the strength and courage of someone in turmoil, you can shift your behavior and your demeanor so that you don't add insult to injury by fretting over them or treating them as broken and disordered victims." End quote. Let's embrace our emotions as well as what others are experiencing, and in doing so, the language of emotions will begin to reveal itself to us in ways that could cause profound changes in our lives. So there we have it, Carla McLaren's guide to cultivating a more empowering relationship with our emotions so that we may discover the wisdom within. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.